Episode 12 for September 1st, 2012 of Transistor, with Trans Journey and Counseling. Translations, we talk of tucking. Transitions, orchidectomy. What's that, you ask? Well, listen in, you'll find out. We have an interview with Trina Ricketts, the organizer of the TNT Sex Awards. Transonic, My Life as a Dominatrix, Doug and the Kettle. And Transformers, Toys and Fun to Enhance Your Sex Life. We talk of bull balls. And transmissions, news around the world, and finally, transcriptions, with a question from Jennifer of Texas.
This is Transistor with your host, Velvet Steel.
Talk of trans folks and everything that makes us happen. Because I know you want to know, and I know you want to listen, and I know you want to ask. And hopefully you're going to listen, learn, and laugh. Trans journey. Counseling. Well, in my situation, you have to go for counseling. It's part of the Harry Benjamin standards. And if you don't, then there's no way you're ever going to get anywhere near a scalpel or a surgeon or the hormones. And I'll tell you, in regards to getting where I'm at and where I went and what I did, you have to go for counseling. That's just one of the prerequisites. And there's this lovely, as I mentioned, Harry Benjamin standards set up by Hopkins University, and they're in Boston. And it's a pretty intensive sort of situation that they make you adhere to with guidelines for other surgeons, counselors, psychiatrists, people to adhere to. Well, prior to me knowing exactly what was going on, I had gone through my thing in puberty and school and grown boobs and things like that. And counselors, well, we have them in high schools. Of course, the counselors at that time weren't interested in talking about anything to do with gender dysphoria, let alone homosexuality or anything to do with queer issues. They were mostly, well, in my case, interested in talking about jobs and careers and things like that. And well, going in high school, I had hormones running rampant through my body. They were making me think things. They were making me do things, stuff that I was beyond my control. And I was one emotional basket case, which really pissed me off because at that time, I really needed to talk to somebody. I spent so much of my time in the bathroom at home crying, wondering what the hell was going on and why was I just so messed up. Even my mother asking me things like, are you homosexual? Are you this? Are you that? Because I'm not going to have any of that shit in my house. So that was what I was dealing with at my house. And there really was truly only one person in my life at that time who I could share things with. And she happened to be my aunt. And there I was going down to her place on weekends when I had the time to get away from high school and get away from all the stuff that was going on there, because I really need to find out what was going on. And I had gone to psychiatrists. I had gone to, counselors, but different kinds of counselors. I'd gone to physiotherapists, all these, you know, psychs and all this other bullshit. And I was starting to really feel like I was crazy. I mean, I remember one instance when I went to see a psychiatrist, unbeknownst to me, I was sitting there not only with the psychiatrist, but also a doctor who was also learning to be a psychiatrist under the gun, totally under the microscope, listening and watching to what I had to say. And by the end of that situation and session of spilling my heart out and my emotional baggage, I had these two idiots tell me that I was a drug addict, that I was an alcoholic, and that I should have my HIV status checked as well, and that I should enter into Alcoholics Anonymous or Narcotics Anonymous. That was really, holy fuck. Needless to say, put me over the edge. And just to make a point, because I knew that there was nothing wrong with me, I went and had all that testing done just to come back negative and prove my point with these doctors by showing my results to them and going through all this other stuff, because I knew I wasn't a drug addict, nor was I an alcoholic. I was fully functioning in society with a full-time job doing all these other different things. I was just questioning a few things that were going on with me. You know, and for going to idiots like that, it really made me feel like I didn't want to. And I can tell you out there that I know people that when you feel bad about an experience like that, chances are you're not going to want to go back. And, you know, these doctors who they think they're not really dealing with you as an individual and trying to get to the root of it. They're dealing with your brain. Like there's a problem with your brain and there's a chemical problem with you and all this other stuff. And that's really seriously different as far as I'm concerned from the whole idea of a counselor or counseling, where they're dealing with you and your environment and what's going on. And it wasn't until one of my trips downtown to my aunt's place on the weekend, just to get away from high school and get away from everything else that was going on there, because I wasn't getting the answers that I wanted to from my GP. I wasn't getting the answers that I wanted to from the counselor at high school, because, well, they were always telling me that you needed to focus on a real job, not all this art oriented situation, and you were going to be doing this and you're going to be doing that and you're going to excel in math. And I hated math. I mean, there was just no reason that I was going to be doing anything to do with math. If it wasn't film arts, drama, arts, I wasn't interested. And of course, in my day, that wasn't something that you need to focus on. You were told that you had to have a real job. Well, what was a real job? And also a real life. And what was a real life? Nobody knew. I didn't know. So going downtown, I ended up finding this place that was a walk-in kind of clinic, not too far from where my aunt lived, just off of College Street in around Spadina. And I walked in there and sat down, and they could tell that I was under distress. And at that time, I believe I was 16, if I remember correctly. And I ended up talking to this lovely gentleman. And he was asking me what was going on. I started explaining to him what was going on in my life. And I ended up seeing this guy for a number of years and feeling really good about myself, starting to understand myself. And there was a period there where I actually stopped seeing him. And I was still going in through high school and still dealing with all that and stuff. And I started to shun what my true feelings were, because that was what I was starting to feel at that point from him, and feeling somewhat stronger, but still having the underlying feelings that I was. And it wasn't until that I decided to move out of the house that I actually went back and said, hey, I want to take you up on an offer, because he believed there was something different in systemic in my chemical makeup. And being that I hadn't, you know, grown body hair and I hadn't developed more masculine traits, anything like that, I still looked very androgynous. And it was, you know, things that I'd be getting from people walking down the street telling me, oh, are you, you're screaming out the car window, are you a guy or a girl? Are you a freak? Are you this? Are you that? And stuff that was really difficult. And there I'd be walking down the street, happy-go-lucky in my own little world, not worrying about nothing, and thinking, oh, I looked pretty much like a boy, and trying to eat and go to the gym and trying to bulk up. Well, that just wasn't happening. And I was still very shapely. He suggested that I go for a chromosome test, and that's what I did, and came back a result that was quite different. XXY is what that tended to reveal, and that made a lot of sense at that time. It made me develop in very different ways, made me think differently. It created a different sort of chemistry in my body. As I had mentioned before in previous shows, I developed boobs when I was in grade 7, and growing up with that was a little bit difficult. And it sort of made that all clear to me. It made me understand why I was thinking the way I was thinking, feeling the way I was feeling. And I'm not saying that everybody out there in this situation is XXY chromosome. It's all within you, you know, as to what you know and what you truly believe yourself to be. But that was one element that did make my life easier to understand. Translations. Tucking. Yep, we're going to talk about that a bit more. People are always asking and wondering, where does it go? What happens with that? How do you have such a smooth appearance on the front when you're wearing tight pants, a skirt, hot shorts, a dress, whatever? Well, it's because you've got that thing tucked so far between your legs that basically it's going to go up your asshole. And I'm not kidding you. So how do you start? How do you get going with that? Well, generally, you're going to be making yourself comfortable and understanding that you're going to be able to stick your goods and your family jewels or whatever you're going to be calling those. And if you know, if you're hating them, in my case, you're just calling it a pee hole, back between your legs. And you're going to make yourself comfortable with it and becoming very clear that that's what's going to be happening. And for some people, tucking means that your testicles go back up inside yourself. And we all know through anatomy class and growing up that your testicles in a male tend, they drop into the scrotum. And that's what happens a bit later. later on in life when you're a child, and that's where they come through. So there's actually two tubes that are still sitting inside you in your abdomen area. And for some people who are tuckers, the testicles will go back up inside them. It's not the best thing to have happen for you if you're planning on keeping them, because there's a reason why they're in your scrotum, and a lot of people don't realize this, is that it's a temperature regulator. That's what the scrotum does. So that skin will relax and it will tighten up depending on what your body is saying in regards to how hot it needs to be and what's going to be happening. So that's why it's there for. But in my circumstance, I didn't care. I didn't want those things. I didn't want them around me, but I wasn't tucking them back up inside myself. So what do? Go out and get a nice pair of tight panties, push everything back between my legs, and start to learn how to rewalk. And rewalking meant, because it was pretty damn uncomfortable and it hurt like a motherfucker at times. And then once you got used to it, well, tucking just was second nature. Open up your legs, squat down ever so slightly, push them back with your hands, and voila, there you go. Nice, smooth appearance. And for me, I was pretty damn good at it. I got really good at making that smooth appearance ever so effortless. And, you know, others that I know are out there getting not only one pair of panties, but two and three to really keep it happening on. But I never had that problem. So it was really, 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 really lovely for me to do that. And that was just part and parcel for the process of getting in there to figure out that if I was going to have that smooth appearance and nice front of a female pelvic region and pelvis, that's what I wanted, right down to the crotch. And it really worked for me. Doesn't work for everybody else, but you know, and depending on your size and things like that, that's what it's all about. Tucking. Transitions. The orchidectomy. The big one. The chop. Well, it's not the big one, but it certainly is a chop. And it's a chop to remove the testicles. Ooh, ouch. I know, I can just picture so many of you out there sitting in your chair with your legs crossing ever so tightly over each other, getting tighter and tighter and tighter, cutting off that circulation to your balls. Well, you know what? That's not the way to protect them. Anyway, orchidectomy, that's the medical term. And what that really applies to is actually having the testicles removed. And there are many individuals in the situation of trans, SRS, who are male to female going through the situation. And generally what they're doing now, just a bit of history on that though, just so you know, eunuchs. Well, the eunuchs of China are the individuals, men, who would look after the royal family. And what had been done to them was they were actually not castrated, but they were had their testicles removed. And their testicles were removed and kept in a little box. And the reason that this was done was because they would take away any sort of sexual desire. And the sexual desire was removed so that when they were dealing and treating the females of the royal family in China, they wouldn't have that desire to do anything like that or feel any need for that. We have since found out, since that has happened, that you're not really getting rid of the full testicles or the testosterone that's actually in the body, because testosterone is produced in other areas of the body. The testicles, even though they produce the 90% of that sort of that portion of the body, that hormone, that chemical, is basically the deciding factor for sex drive. So there's still a little bit of sex drive that was out there. But, you know, here these individuals were having that done, and it was a pretty gruesome process at that time. And you basically would cut through, and they would have them removed, and then a hot poker, scalding, boiling, iron hot poker, literally, would cauterize that area back and sealed, and there they would. They'd be left to sit in a little box and dry out into little rocks, pebbles, whatever they want to call them. They would carry those around with them for the rest of their lives. The same idea applied to the castrati, the opera singers, the young boys opera singers in Italy. And we're going back about 500 years now when this was all happening. And they would do the same thing to them, except they would, what they would do with those boys is they would drug them, get them a little bit drunk, and they would go in and cut that out and have them out, and they would tie that up into a ribbon, and they would literally walk around with those as well, just so they could keep their voice at a high-pitched level. Well, coming up to today, what happens today is if they're catching you early on in life and you realize that you are transgendered, SRS, male to female, that kind of thing, in your process of that quest for your sexual reassignment surgery, they will actually have your testicles removed early on in puberty, so they catch that. And that's an orchidectomy where they will actually cut into the scrotum of the testicles, or not the testicles, but the scrotum skin, and remove the testicles. It's kind of, you know, what it is what it is, and cut in and stitch it all up and leave it at that. So that's gone. And then after that, you're on to hormone therapy of estrogen and your progesterone to work in sync with the body. Even spironolactone is given at that time to actually let the estrogens and the progesterone work prior to the testosterone, because the testosterone is still prevalent and it's still strong in the body and still produced in the body, and they need to pull it back and let some of it actually deplete itself in the body. So there you go. And when you are going for that process, one thing that they also recommend is electrolysis, the removal of the hair on the scrotum. Now, anybody who knows about electrolysis is knowing that it's not a pleasant process. And I have discussed other methods of hair removal as well. One of them now being the no-no by radiancy, which is out there, and it seems to be showing a lot of promise. But electrolysis involves galvanic current, electrical current, going through a needle into the follicle and zapping the root bulb and killing it. It's not pain-free, certainly is painful, and you're going to numb yourself with some sort of topical anesthetic, whether it's a Novocaine kind of thing, or if you're using Emla, which requires a bit of time to preset. So there is their time in the process to go through to get those nuts removed. Next up, another addition to the show is an interview with Trina Ricketts, the organizer of the TNT Sex Awards. Have a listen. I think you'll like what she has to say.
Hi there, this is Velvet of Transistor, and I'm out and about on my show with Trina Ricketts at the TNT Awards show here in lovely Surrey, British Columbia. And I guess what I want to know is what possessed you or what got you to put on a show like this, an awards ceremony for people in the sex industry? Like, I mean, that's sort of unheard of, isn't it?
Well, I realized that, especially in Canada, we have a very vibrant and, you know, amazing, ethical, and very, you know, talented, skilled community of sex industry workers, and yet we were never recognized for our amazing work. And so I thought that it would be really cool to put together an award ceremony that would honor not only the adult entertainers in the industry, but also our co-workers, our clients, advocates, and allies in the industry. And also it was really important to me not only to like honor the people that are in the industry and let customers know where to spend their money, but also to bring our industry together and be a more cohesive unit. There's been a lot of hierarchy in our industry, and you'll have different people from different aspects, you know, trying to separate themselves from the industry in general or from other people who are a part of the industry. And to me, that is a grave mistake. And I wanted to be able to bring our community together so that we could realize that we're all very similar, even though our jobs might be a little bit different,
right.
And that this community is just made up of amazing people that, you know, entrepreneurs, people that, you know, have a lot of creativity and a lot of drive and motivation, and good people. And in this industry, I have met the most ethical, compassionate, loving, interesting, creative people that I've ever met in my life. And I just feel like people don't realize that that's what this industry is made of, that we have such a bad rap. And so I thought an award ceremony like this could challenge those impressions, as well as give us an opportunity to, you know, honor each other and recognize each other for the good work that we're doing.
I think that's amazing, because when I'm thinking of, you know, these kinds of awards, I'm just thinking basically of the talent, but you certainly gave me a scope and an understanding that it's more than just the talent. It's about the supporters and the people that really make it happen, i.e., you know, the suppliers of clothes, for example, or the people who produce the music, or, you know, the lighting, the camera guys, all that kind of idea. So do you think Vancouver's ready for something like this? And do you think that it's going to get bigger?
I do believe that Vancouver is ready for this. If any city in Canada is ready for this, it would be Vancouver or the Lower Mainland. And that is because we are the most progressive city in Canada by far. I don't mean that to insult anyone in other cities, because I've met a lot of people in other cities that are just as progressive as Vancouver. But I think that in terms of like the amount of people in the population who are progressive, politically minded, that we have a high ratio of people who think that way. And so we have a better chance of kind of ingraining that attitude into our population. I think that the new generations that are being raised today have a lot more open-mindedness about sexuality. They don't want to shame their children. They don't want to shame men for having, you know, a capacity to be visually stimulated. They want to enjoy their sexuality, take their power as a gift, like the, you know, in terms of sexual power or gender power, and consider it a gift, and also honor the people who are doing a great job of already putting on a good show with their gifts, you know. And so I appreciate our newer generations. I'm so glad that the world is changing in that way, because when our sex industry and our adult entertainment industry is experiencing a lot of stigma, that means that people in general are experiencing a lot of stigma around sexuality.
Right.
And as long as there's a lot of stigma around sexuality, we're going to have shame, we're going to have inhibitions, we're going to have people reacting, you know, in anger, shame, and violence. And so if we really want to impact people in a way of, like, reducing violence, sexual violence, the most important thing we can do is to make it a sacred and beautiful thing and stop shaming people for it.
I think that's incredible, because one thing that I think about with the whole sexuality and sex aspect is the fact that we keep it under wraps, but yet we can go and turn on the news and see people getting blown away. Case in point with Denver, Colorado, just recently, where we had 16 individuals in a theater being killed. And that's all over the news, and they're even devoting shows to that. But, you know, nothing about sexuality, and that really bothers me as well. I know that you did something recently as well where you did a lot of demystifying about sex industry trade secrets. Can you tell us a little bit about that? Because I know everybody wants to know. I know most people in my realm of friends think that getting in front of a camera involves getting in front of a camera and just going for broke from start to finish. But that's not the case, is it?
Are you speaking of getting in front of the camera in terms of, like, being an advocate?
A performer.
Oh, a performer. So, like, an adult film and that kind of thing?
Yeah, or so, even getting up on stage.
Or webcam or on stage. Yeah. So what Trade Secrets is about, and you can find it at tradesecretsguide.blogspot.com, it's about respecting people who have even, like, an interest in getting into the sex industry, and respecting people who are already in the sex industry or who are accessing services in the industry. And so we're talking about co-workers, sex industry workers, or adult entertainers, as many of us like to be called, or clients. And so what Trade Secrets did is we interviewed all these different people within the industry and asked them, you know, what are best practices? What are health and safety? Like, how is your work improved? And we found that health and safety is not just about wearing condoms and making sure that your doors lock on your accommodations, but it's also about being able to make money, because if you're not making money, then you're more desperate. If you're more desperate, you're more willing to take a customer that you maybe don't have a very good feeling about, and which sets you up for more violence. And so through Trade Secrets, not only did we try to show people how to get into the industry in the different areas that they're interested in, but also how to protect themselves in the industry and how to make money in the industry. Seduction techniques and that kind of thing as well. What laws pertain to each portion of that particular industry in Canada. And, you know, just to be informed when they get into the industry, how they can, you know, make the best of it, make the most money that they can, and also keep hold of their dignity and respect themselves and not feel that they've ever crossed boundaries that they didn't want to cross in the first place.
I love the way that you say seduction techniques, because I know most people are really curious about seduction techniques, because everybody wants to be better in the bedroom. But I also know, from some of the information that I saw on your surveys there, that you did a lot of stuff around, or interviews with Asian girls and stuff like that. And from what I understood in reading it, you demystified quite a bit of the human trafficking aspects as well. And you know, the whole idea of, like, a lot of the people that you, from what I understood, now correct me if I'm wrong, was that these girls were there because they wanted to be there, and they are working, making dollars, and some of them have families. Is that not true?
It's very true, and it's very funny, because I often have different people, you know, police officers, excuse me for the noise.
That was so awesome.
You've got a great show going on here.
We have a lot. We did some interviews with people who don't speak English, we had to translate the questionnaires, and we found out that they're not actually trafficked. They're working because they want to work in the sex industry. Their biggest fear is to be busted, and the reason why is because they're keeping their work secret from their families and their friends, and especially within the Asian community, it's a big shame upon them to be within the industry, and however, it's still a big market for them, and if they want to take care of their families and put food on the table, I mean, some of these women keep it from their husbands just because they want their children to eat, okay? So this is, I mean, it's not right that someone should have to do something they don't want to do to feed their children, but it is right to have an option to do sex work to feed your children, okay? Like, I agree with the prohibitionist feminist that no woman or man or anyone should have to do sex work if they don't want to do it. However, I recognize that a lot of people do want to do the work, do enjoy the work, and that everyone should have the right to access that career if it will help their family.
And I think that's really good, because it's about demystifying, as far as I'm concerned. It is really getting crazy in here. People are having a good time, and that's really good to see. And I'm happy that you're doing this, and I'm happy to be a part of it. And I really want to see this grow as well myself. And anything I can do to help, I will certainly put that your way. And if I can advertise or get the message out there, that's really what I want to do. Because I believe in this, and I believe in making it, you know, accessible to people and break down those walls of, you know, shame that everybody seems to place around it. So, Trina, thank you so much. And I hope you listen in on Transistor at Out Loud shows. And I'm certainly going to give you a plug big time for, say that again, where we're going to look for you.
You can look for me at, you can look at tradesecretsguide.blogspot.com. And I just want to quickly say thank you, Velvet, for all of your work demystifying the sex industry and making people feel good about their sexuality and just being an honest and open and wonderful person who tells the truth, because we all appreciate you and love you.
Aw, thanks. That deserves a hug.
Transonic. Because I am supersonic. At least I think so. My life is a dominatrix. Fun, frolic, craziness. It's not always serious. And sometimes you have to make do with what you don't have or what you do have. And one of them happens to be weights. I am pretty resourceful. And we all know that dealing with domination, being a dominatrix, anything to do with fetish on those aspects can be a very costly venture. There are so many things out there that you want to buy and you want to come across and you want to include in your tickle trunk, your toy box, whatever you want to call it. And it's always new. There's always something different on the market. There's always something that is going to cost better or be better or do this or do that. And it's just a matter of your own personal choices to what you want. And if that be the case, you'd probably have $1 million worth of stuff in your place. And for me, in my earlier days of it, I was lacking in the whole idea of weights. And when I say weights, I'm talking about CBT. What's that, you're asking? Well, cock and ball torture. I have a lot of clients and did have a lot of clients who were very interested in that. And that was one of those things that I just happened to come across on my own with an individual who expressed interest in that. And he was very instrumental in helping me learn all the different facets of it. Whether or not I was hanging weights off of his nuts. Yes, off of his nuts around his scrotum tied ever so tightly. And making them hang, or if I was pulling on his foreskin, or if I was yanking on his dick, or putting on the actual really scritchy, scratchy gloves and grabbing his cock and really putting that through a whole bunch of pain. I was doing all kinds of stuff. But since I didn't have a lot of stuff to actually play around with in the start, one of the things that he was requesting was some weights, and he was asking for weights on his nuts. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to begin with this one. So what did I do? I went and got some rope. And looking at the rope was figuring out, how am I going to do this? Because I'd already attached those around his nuts many a times before and had him lay face down on the floor with his cock between the back of his legs, coming up between his legs, and I would yank so hard on that dick and that rope would always fall off. It would always actually not fall off. It would slide off and do a nice little rug burn or rope burn down that cock. And as it did it, because he was always so hard, slam against the floor. It was so funny. It was so hilarious. And, you know, in the times that I had some of my assistants, and I'm going to talk about those at a later show, so I'm expecting you to listen in on my assistants who would always come in and get caught up in some crazy ass shit, who never knew from one minute to the next what I was going to be calling them up for. Can you come on up? I need some help with this situation. Uh-oh, what you got going on? Do I have to come up dressed the way I am? You'll be fine. Anyway, so there I was thinking, what am I going to tie around his balls? What am I going to tie around his nuts so I could stretch that scrotum? And yes, when people talk about ball stretching, you're not ball stretching, because your balls are the same size. They're not going to change the size that they are. But what you're going to do, you're going to stretch and scratch that scrotum. Tongue twister in there. Did you hear that? And anyway, so there I was. He's tied up to the wall and I'm wondering what the hell's going on. How am I going to do this? Okay, got the rope, looking at the rope. I'm standing looking at the kitchen. What do I have in the kitchen? As I said before, I'm pretty good at the kitchen. I got my kettle. I filled that kettle full of water, tied the rope around his nuts, tied the rope around the kettle, pulled it up tight, and had him squat. Wow, that was quite heavy, that thing. And I remember watching him standing there with this thing pulling fiercely on those nuts, pulling fiercely on that scrotum, and it was stretching it so tight. You know when you take a rubber balloon, and I don't know anybody who's out there who's done this kind of thing, they know exactly what I'm talking about. You take that rubber balloon and you twist it and it gets really tight, and we've always put our teeth up against it and it's like, you know, that kind of thing, rubbing your teeth against it. Uh-huh. Well, the same happens to a set of nuts and the testicles there inside that scrotum. It gets really tight and really shiny. And of course, what do you do when that happens? Well, in my case, I'd go over there with my long porno nails, and I'm saying porno nails, you know, they're at least a half an inch or longer, and I'd scratch the shit out of his nuts. Totally scratch the shit out of those things. Well, it got a little more interesting because I let him down off my cross and had him walk across the room. And what I wanted him to do was swing back and forth with that kettle tied to his nuts, tied to that scrotum so tight that it was really shiny. And, well, he got really into that. And as he's walking across the room, swinging that kettle back and forth full of water, it slipped right off and went flying across the room. Needless to say, there was water and a kettle all over the place. And, well, I had to maintain my cool. I just put him up against the wall and told him to stand right there as I promptly walked into the bathroom ever so sexily, ever so coyly, opened up the bathroom window and laughed my ass out the window. What was I supposed to do? Transformers, toys, sex toys, S&M gear, all those fun things. And, you know, hot on the heels of Transonic today, I wanted to talk to you about bull balls. These aren't cheap, but I knew that having used the water kettle on his nuts, that I had to come up with something better than that. So what did I do? I got on the phone, called up a few people who had been experienced players for quite some time and asked them, where can I go? What can I figure out? What can I do? And I have to admit, this is before the internet became really widely available. It wasn't even, well, let's put it this way. I was using a pager back then. That's how I was accessing my clients. And we were getting access to our clients through the phone lines, where you place an ad on the phone, record your message, and then they would call you back and leave a message on the phone line. Then you would call into that and retrieve your messages and call back your clients. To me, I thought that was pretty civil. Anyway, going back to the whole idea of trying to find out where these products were. So through all these guys who were so involved in the scene and women who was involved in the scene, they told me about a lovely product called Bull Balls. And they are a device, well, a device, I guess, whatever you want to call that, an implement, an application, made out of leather. And they come in several different weights, starting at 3 pounds, 5, 10, even up to 15. And they're sewn inside a leather sack. Now, in that leather sack that hangs down there, it's actually got Velcro. And actually, you can even use, there's some of them that have Velcro. There's some of them that have buckles on them. Some of them have Velcro and a buckle. Well, I went and got myself a set of bull balls. And I got them through a lovely company, Fetters, out of San Francisco. I ordered them, not online, because don't forget, the internet wasn't happening then. Called them up, placed an order by phone, did the Visa thing, and here I had this lovely set of leather bull balls in my possession 2 weeks later. They were amazing. I could stick those things on most of my clients, and they love the weight, and they really hang down, and they make them look like, well, a set of bull balls. They're hanging nice and tight and low between their legs. Now, these are guys that you're probably going to find online at most shops online. I tend to shop at Extreme Restraints these days, as well as Fetters and my toy store. And that's where you'll find these things. And they range in price anywhere from $20 up to $50, depending on the size, depending on the weight that you're using, and depending on what they're made of, because now they're not just made of leather, but they're also made of rubber. And these are fun. And for those experienced players who can take them, throw the heavyweights on them. Why not? Get in there. Do it. Go crazy. And for the new inexperienced players who might want to check it out and not quite sure, don't go with the heavyweights right off the bat, because, yeah, it's going to pull, it's going to stretch, and it can hurt a little bit. Transmissions. News from around the world. Some good, some not so good. Some fun, some sad, some interesting. Well, I'm going to start off with this one here. Serbia. Well, trans around the world join Chaz Bono. And if you don't know who Chaz Bono is, well, you know who Cher is, don't you? Well, this is Cher's son. Are choosing Eastern European country for gender reassignment. Serbia has become a mecca for gender reassignment surgery with the help of subsidies from the country's national health insurance. According to the Belgrade Center for Genital Reconstructive Surgery, nearly 100 foreigners and Serbs have undergone the procedure in the past year, reported the New York Times. Transgender people are attracted to Serbia because of the low cost of the surgery, while others from nearby countries such as Austria, Bulgaria, and Greece travel to the Eastern European country nation because of the stigma at home. Even Cher's son Chaz Bono has said he wants to have the surgery in Belgrade, where the price tag is $10,000 for foreigners compared with $50,000 or more at some clinics in the U.S. Serbian trans activist Christian told the New York Times, "It is surprising that a conservative patriarchal country is becoming a center for sex change operations, but social attitudes are slowly shifting." The shift in attitude in the country can also be seen in its increasing acceptance of LGBT rights. With the capital city's Gay Pride Park march due to go ahead in September, despite being banned last year. Serbian movie The Parade, a rom-com about a gay couple struggling to organize a pride event in Belgrade, has also been a surprise hit this year. The European Parliament has urged Serbia to improve its gay rights record in order to join the EU in the future. Here's another interesting one, the level of extreme that some people go to. Britney fan says she fooled Hollywood paparazzi with her womanizer look, claiming the star's music helped her through depression. Okay. A transgender woman from the U.S. spent $70,000 to look like her idol Britney Spears, claiming the toxic singer's music helped her through depression. Karen Nicole Hayes says New York Daily that she forked out $30,000 for surgery and $40,000 on hormones. Wow, that's a lot. I can tell you right now that my SRS surgery itself was $25,000, but I don't see paying $40,000 on hormones. Regardless, she's paid that for therapy, for clothes, and cosmetics to achieve her pop princess transformation. The 26-year-old who grew up in a conservative part of Ohio claimed Britney was her inspiration during tough times. She said, "Britney was someone that aided me through depression. Dancing to Britney's videos also aided me in losing weight and feeling better about myself." Hayes told the U.S. newspaper how her family struggled to accept her as a woman and received death threats at school. However, she said she enjoys the attention she gets from looking like the womanizer star, even fooled paparazzi at a Hollywood birthday party for Britney's ex-husband Kevin Federline in 2007. Hayes says, "I showed up with long black hair and shades. When I left, they shouted, 'Is that Britney?' And they followed my friend and me to our car with cameras flashing." Ooh la la. At any rate, here's another one. International LGBTI activists say policy for testing if female athletes are real women is unscientific, discriminatory, and ineffective. With the 2012 Summer Olympics just having closed, the International Olympic Committee, IOC, faced a new scandal over its gender testing. The gender verification policy was designed to determine whether intersex athletes should compete as women or men. Intersex people may quite naturally produce higher levels of male or female than average for the identified gender. The new rules say women with levels of testosterone naturally equal to that of a man will be barred, or were barred, from competing with other women, but the IOC didn't specify a normal level of hormones, what they would be, leaving it up to a panel of three experts who could disqualify female athletes if they didn't meet or match expectations. The rules also demanded that national Olympic bodies actively investigated any perceived deviation in sexual characteristics, sex characteristics, before sending athletes to the games. International LGBTI digital campaign organization AllOut.org said that the policy was too invasive. They demanded Olympics president Jacques Rogge reverse it immediately before the games began on July 27th. Biology and humans are much more diverse than we would ever guess. What makes someone a man or a woman can't be identified in a single test or using a single measurement, said Andre Banks, director of AllOut.org. The new rule was degrading and humiliating to athletes who've worked for years to overcome tremendous obstacles in order to give everything for their sport and country. We don't ban people from becoming basketball players for being taller than average, or weightlifters for being stronger than average. Athletes are punished for cheating, and the International Olympic Committee already has a battery of tests to maintain the integrity of the Olympic Games. The new rules came after a 2009 incident when Caster Semenya, a South African runner, was forced by another body, the International Association of Athletics Federations, to undergo 11 months of invasive gender testing after she was deemed too fast and too muscular to be a real woman. Banks said the committee already has strict standards and a battery of tests to identify cheaters. The rule is something different. That certainly is a different rule. The IOC forces doctors to act as gender police, and if they don't, they could face sanctions. It's an invasion of privacy, it violates medical ethics, and it breeds an environment where if women are too good, they are suspected of cheating. That is the opposite of the Olympic spirit. Transcriptions. A question from Jennifer of Texas. And she's asking, does it cost a lot to have SRS? And what are the fees associated? Okay, so that's a double-edged question, actually, and it's two questions in one. It does cost a lot to have SRS surgery, and it also depends on the country you're having that in. And it can range anywhere from, as we heard about Serbia, $10,000 up to $25,000 up to $60,000, depending on the clinic, depending on the surgeon, depending on the procedure. And really, when it comes to that, you need to do your homework. You need to get out there and see what's online. And I'm suggesting that you look online, because that seems to be the avenue of choice these days for any sort of advertising to check stuff out. And you've got doctors in Belgium, you've got doctors in Serbia, as we just heard. We've got doctors in San Francisco, we have doctors in Portland, we have doctors in New York. We even have doctors in Florida who are actually performing upper surgery on female-to-male transsexuals, removing of the breasts. And here in Canada, we also have doctors in Montreal, and we have one here in Vancouver that is also educated and trained to do SRS surgeries, but not allowed because he can't get any sort of operating time. So you need to do your research. I mean, even Thailand, for example, they are performing surgeries over there at quite a reduced rate than what you're finding in North America. I would suggest that you check it out and make sure that these doctors are accredited, that they're good, and that they certainly come within your budget needs. And in some places, you may be able to get your surgery funded. I know here in BC that there is funding available for individuals who are actually BC residents. And I know, for example, for myself, to become a functioning member of society, I actually fought the government to make that accessible for myself to actually head off to England to get the surgery when I went for it. And surgeries are broken down. The fees associated, you are going to pay a different fee for a rhinoplasty, for example. You're going to pay a different fee for a forehead reduction. You're going to pay a different fee for your jawline. You're going to pay a different fee for having your lips enlarged or augmented. Your breasts, for example, liposuction. There are doctors who do your SRS surgery, lower surgery in two stages, where they will create outer labia without an inner labia, and you'll have to go back at a later date to have that done. There are other doctors who do it all in one step. And personally, I recommend that you do it all in one step, because why do you have to go through a surgery twice just to have that done? That's just my own personal opinion. So I would look for a doctor that's doing that all at once. But depending on where you are, you can also get a loan. You can go to your bank to talk about getting a loan to have your surgery. That's up to you to pay it back. But I think it's all important to be a functioning member of society and be out there and be in the community and show that you can be. Don't go out there and do it like some I know that are on welfare and go out and get there done. And I do bring that up because it's a soft spot. I think we all need to be productive, functioning members of society, proving our points that we are out there wanting to live a good life.
You've been listening to Transistor with your host, Velvet Steel.